Well, that went well.
The warded man didn't go far, sitting and putting his back to a tree, closing his eyes. His ears could hear the scraping of caterpillars on leaves. If Renna needed him, he would hear and come. He cursed the childhood naivete that kept him from seeing Harl for what he was. When Elaine had offered herself to his father, he had thought her wicked beyond words, but she was just doing what she needed to survive, as he himself had done out on the Krasian desert. And Renna, if he'd gone back with his father instead of running off when his mother died, she would have come back to the farm with them, safe from her father and spared a death sentence. Their own children would be promising age by now. But he had turned his back on Renna, another path to happiness abandoned, and her life had become a horror as a result. He was wrong to have brought her with him. Selfish. He was thinking only of himself, to damn her to this life just to keep himself sane. Renna was choosing his path because she felt she had nothing left to lose. But it wasn't too late for her. She could never go back to the brook. But if he could get her to Deliverer's Hollow, she could see that there were still good folk in the world. Folk willing to fight without giving up the very things that made them human. But the Hollow, even if they took the straightest route possible, was still more than a week's travel from their keep. He needed to return Renna to civilization immediately, before her new wildness became the only thing she knew. Riverbridge was less than 2 days away. From there, they could go on to Cricket Run, Angiers, and Farmer's Stump before reaching the Hollow. Every chance that presented itself, he would force her to interact with people and remain alert through the sun instead of sleeping the mornings away and tracking demon patterns in the afternoon, as both of them had taken to doing. He hated the idea of spending so much time amid people himself, but there was nothing for it. Renna was more important. If people saw his wards and began to talk, so be it. Euchre had kept his word in letting refugees cross the dividing, but with all of Ryzen's harvest lost and summer solstice come and gone, it was hard times for all. Riverbridge was swollen on both sides of the river by a growing tent city of refugees outside the walls of the town proper, poorly warded and rife with filth and poverty. Rennick crinkled her nose in disgust as they rode through, and he knew the scene was doing nothing to dissuade her rejection of civilization. The number of guards at the gate had increased as well, and they looked disparagingly at the warded man and Renna as they approached. It wasn't surprising. Covered head to toe, even in the hot sun, the warded man's appearance never failed to draw attention, and Renna, clad in scandalously revealing rags and covered in fading black stem stains, did little to reassure them. But the warded man had yet to meet a guard in any city or town who didn't turn welcoming at the sight of a gold coin, and he had many in his saddlebags. Soon after, they were inside the walls, stabling their mounts outside a bustling inn. It was early evening, and the bridge folk were returning home from a day's toil.
Don't like it here. Half the folk are starving, and the other half look as if they expect us to rob them.
Ain't nothing for it. I need news, and that can't be had out in the wilds. Get used to towns for a while.
The taproom of the inn was crowded at this time of day, but much of the activity was centered at the bar, and the warded man spotted a small empty table in the back. He and Renna sat, and a barmaid came to them after a few moments. She was young and pretty, though her eyes had a sad, tired look to them. Her dress was clean for the most part, but it was worn, and he knew at once from the tone of her skin and the shape of her face that she was Rezonian, probably one of the first of the refugees lucky enough to find work. There was a raucous table of men seated next to them.
Hey, Millie! Another round here!
He slapped the barmaid's rump. She jumped and closed her eyes before putting on a false smile and half-turning to the men.
Sure as day, boys.
Her smile vanished when she turned back to them.
What'll you have?
Two ales and dinner, and a room if there's one to spare.
There is, but with all the folk passing through town, price is dear.
The warded man nodded, laying a gold coin on the table. The maid's eyes bulged. She had probably never seen real gold in her life.
That should cover our meal and a night's drinking. You can keep the change. Now, who should I speak to about that room?
The girl snatched up the coin instantly before any of the surrounding patrons could see it.
Talk to Mitch. He owns the place.
She pointed to a large man with rolled sleeves and a white apron, sweating behind the bar as he tried to keep all the mugs being thrust at him full of ale. As he turned to look, the warded man saw her thrust the coin into the front of her dress.
Thank you.
Have your ales right away, Tander.
Stay here and keep to yourself while I get us a room. I won't be long.
Renna nodded, and he moved off. There was a tight press at the bar, men looking for a last few ales before retiring behind their wards for the night. He had to wait at the end for the innkeeper's attention, but when the man glanced his way, the warded man flashed another of his gold coins, and he came swiftly. Mitch had the look of a once burly man gone fat. Formidable enough to toss an unruly patron, perhaps, but success and middle age seemed to have sapped the strength of his youth.
A room.
The warded man handed him the coin. He pulled another from his purse and held it up.
And news of the South, if you have it. Been out Tibbetts Brook way.
Ain't nothing passing for news out there.
The warded man took a step back, and the innkeeper immediately backed away, glancing nervously at the coin, afraid it might disappear.
South's all anyone talks about these days, Tender. Ever since the desert rats stole the Hollow's herb gatherer as bride for their leader, the demon of the desert.
Ugh, Jardier.
Word is, he came there looking to kill the warded man, but the deliverer's up and disappeared.
Rage welled up in the warded man, burning like bile. If Jardier harmed Leisha in any way, if he so much as touched her, he would kill him and scatter his armies back to the desert.
Is you all right, Tender?
The warded man flicked him the mangled coin that had been in his clenched fist and turned away without waiting for a room key. He needed to get back to the Hollow with no delay.
Rena!
Rena sucked in her breath as they entered the tavern. She had never seen a place like this, where folk gathered in such a tight, uncomfortable press. The din was overwhelming, and the air was hot and stale, choked with pipe smoke and sweat. She felt her heart pounding, but when she glanced at Arlen, she saw he stood tall, his stride sure, and she remembered who he was, who they were. She straightened as well, meeting the eyes of those who stared with cool indifference. When the man at the table next to them slapped the barmaid's bottom, Rena felt a rage fly through her like nothing she had ever felt. Arlen pretended not to see, but she knew better. Like her, he was probably fighting the urge to break the man's arm. After Arlen left to speak with the innkeeper, the man turned his chair to face her.
Thought that Tender'd never leave.
He was a tall Milanese man, broad-shouldered, with a coarse yellow beard and long golden hair. His companions at the table all turned to look at Rena, pawing at her bare flesh with their eyes.
Tender?
Your chaperone in the robes. Figure a girl as pretty as you needs a holy man to escort her about, because no other man could keep his hands off.
The man reached under the table, his large hand wrapping around her bare thigh and squeezing.
I figure you're woman enough for all three of us. Bet you're already dripping for it.
His hand probed higher beneath her skirt. Rena had had enough. She reached down and gripped his thumb with her left hand while putting the knuckle of her right hard into the pressure point between his thumb and forefinger.
Ow!
The big man's grip weakened, and a Sharasak twist bent his wrist back and planted his hand firmly on the table, where her knife cut it off. Suddenly, blood began to spurt from the wound. His friends all leapt to their feet, knocking back their chairs. Rena was ready for them. She leapt onto the table, crouching with her feet set wide and her father's knife in a downward grip beneath her forearm, hidden from most onlookers, but ready to slash out at any who came near.
Rena!
Arlen grabbed her from behind. She kicked and twisted as he pulled her down from the table.
Wait, what's going on here?
Mitch shoved through the gathering crowd carrying a heavy cudgel.
No! The witch cut off my hand!
Lucky I didn't cut off more than that! You had no right to touch me there! I ain't promised to you!
The innkeeper whirled on her, but then caught sight of Arlen, and his eyes widened. Arlen's hood had fallen back as he struggled to hold her, revealing his warded flesh to all.
The warded man.
Deliverer!
Time to go.
Rennick kept pace with Arlen as he shoved past those who did not scurry out of his way. He tucked his hood back in place, but there was still a sizable crowd following them from the inn. Arlen quickened his pace, dragging her to the stables, where he flipped the hand another golden coin and headed for Twilight Dancer. Moments later, they burst from the stables and galloped from the town. The guards at the gate ran after them as the crowd from the inn came running up behind, but dusk was falling and no one dared follow them into the gloaming.
Correspondent, Ren! You can't just go around cutting people's hands off!
They had stopped for the night in a clearing not far from town.
Deserved it. And no man gonna touch me there again, except I want him to.
Break his thumb next time. No one will look twice at you for that. After what you did, there'll be no going back to Riverbridge for some time.
Hated it there anyway.
She spread her arms as if to embrace the night.
This is where we belong.
Deliverer's Hollow's where I belong. And with what that innkeeper told me before you pulled your crazy stunt, ain't no time to waste getting there.
So let's go.
How can we? You just cut us off from the only ripping bridge in Thesa. Dividing's too deep to ford and too wide for Dancer to swim.
Sorry. Didn't know.
Done is done, Ren. We'll figure something out, but you're going to need to cover up a bit in towns. Fighting to bear your wards to the night, but that much flesh will put ideas in the head of any man that's easy in the light.
Any head but yours, it seems.
All they see is bare legs and cleavage. I see the blood-drunk girl who thinks with her knife more than with her head.
Son of the corp!
She launched herself at him, knife leading. Arlen slid to the side effortlessly, grabbing her wrist and twisting the knife from her hand. He put his hand against her elbow and used her own force to throw her onto her back.
You're making my point for me! Stop it!
Ain't this what you wanted? Someone didn't slow you down? Someone who weren't afraid of the night?
She pulled at his grip, but his arms were iron. Their faces were mere inches apart.
Didn't want anything, Ren, except to get you out of a bad situation. Didn't mean to make you like me.
You didn't make me do anything except look hard at myself. Everything else I done because I wanted. You leave me tomorrow, I'll still paint my skin. I ain't going back to prison now I've had a taste of being free.
She felt his grip weaken and could have pulled her hands free if she'd wanted to. But there was something in Arlen's eyes, a flicker of understanding she hadn't seen before.
Thought of the night we played Kissy in the hayloft a lot when I was a girl. Meant that kiss as a promise, and I felt it on my lips years after, while I waited for you to come back. Always thought you would. Didn't kiss no other till Kobe Fisher. And by then, it was the only way not to be alone with Dad. Kobe was a good man, but I didn't really love him any more than he did me. Barely knew each other.
You barely knew me, too, when we were kids.
Didn't know what promising meant, either. Or that what Laney and Dad were doing was wrong. Didn't understand a lot of things I do now.
She felt tears welling in her eyes and had no choice but to let them fall.
Seeing what you are and how you live. Ain't got any illusions. But I could still be a wife to you. Want to? You'll have me.
He kept looking at her wordlessly, but his eyes said more. He bent even closer. Their noses touched gently, and she felt a shiver go through her.
Sometimes I can still feel that kiss.
She closed her eyes and parted her lips. For a moment, she was certain he would kiss her, but then he let go her arms and rolled off. She opened her eyes in surprise to see him get to his feet and turn away.
You don't know as much as you think you do, Ren.
Creator, you're married already!
But Arlen looked back at her. This was not the polite barks he might give at a jest or a cruel sound meant to hurt, but a full laugh that shook his body so much he needed to put a hand on Twilight Dancer to steady himself. She felt her lungs ease as the sound denied her fear. Something in her gave way. It went on a good while, and the tension between them had vanished. Renna got to her feet and put a hand on Arlen's arm.
If there's something I don't know, then tell me.
Arlen looked at her and nodded. Again, he pulled from her grasp, walking a few feet away, his eyes on the ground.
Here.
He kicked the dirt.
There's a path through the core right here.
She came over, looking with her warded eyes. Indeed, the glowing mist eddying about their feet was flowing from a spot like smoke from a pipe.
I can feel it stretching all the way to the core. It's calling to me, Ren. Like my mam at supper time, it's calling me and... if I wanted to.
He began to fade away, as if he were a ghost or a Corland.
No!
Renna grabbed at him, but her hands passed right through.
You tell it to throw its call down the well!
Arlen solidified after a moment, though his eyes were still sad.
The wards ain't why I can't live a normal life, Ren. This is where drawing too much magic leads. I'm more demon now than man. An honest word, each dawn I wonder if today's the day the sun's gonna burn me away for good.
You ain't no demon. Demon wouldn't be worried about the Liverer's Hollow or Tibbetts Brook. Demon wouldn't care if some girl he knew got caught or put his life aside for months to try and help her.
Maybe. But only a demon had asked that girl to become one herself.
You didn't ask me nothing. I make my own choices now.
Then take time and make it with care. 'cause it ain't one you can take back.
Roach had told everyone he practiced his fiddle by the great stairwell of the manse rather than in his own wing because that precise spot would let the sound echo throughout the building. It was true enough, but the real reason he had chosen the spot was that it afforded a perfect view of the door to Amanva and Sikva's chambers. For 3 days, he'd seen no sign of the girls. He didn't know why he cared. What had he been thinking, standing up for Sikva when he had the perfect excuse to refuse them both, or letting them stay after they had tried to kill Leisha? Was he actually considering becoming son-in-law to the demon of the desert? The thought of marriage had always terrified Roger. He had left Hamlet's half a dozen times in the last few years to avoid that noose. Yet he had leapt to Sikva's rescue without a thought, and even now the beautiful harmony of their voices resounded in his head. Roger ached to join that harmony, and when he thought of how their robes had fallen to the floor, it brought another kind of ache, one he hadn't felt for any other woman since he met Leisha. But Leisha didn't want him, and Eric had died drunk and friendless. Abin's women appeared now and again to bring food and remove commode pots, but the door to the girls' chambers never opened more than a crack, and always slammed shut before he could so much as peek inside. That night, at Alagasharak, Roger kept a nervous eye on Jardir. Kaval had Garrett and Wanda fighting with spear and shield alongside the other Dalsharim, and they acquitted themselves well. Garrett might be too clumsy for Sharasak, but in a shield press, there was no one stronger, no one who could reach his spear farther from the warded shield wall. But Roger felt his absence acutely as he, Leisha, and Jardir followed the press with several spears of the Deliverer, even though Roger kept them bathed in his music and the demons did not approach. Sooner or later, Jardir would ask Roger's intentions toward his daughter and niece, and if his answer was not satisfactory, violence and death might quickly occur. His. But thus far, Jardir only had eyes for Leisha, doting on her like a man truly in love. Of course, that made spending time around him no easier, especially when Roger caught Leisha returning the gazes. He wasn't a fool. He knew what that meant, even if she didn't. Roger was relieved when the sweep ended and they were dismissed into the city. He was thoroughly miserable, his fingers numb from playing and every muscle in his body aching. He was bathed in sweat and coated in a greasy layer of soot from burning demons. He stumbled to his bedchamber, thinking to fall into oblivion for a few hours, but the sweet-smelling Crasian oil lamps in his room were lit, which was odd, since it had still been light out when he left. A pitcher of cool water was on his nightstand, along with a loaf of bread that was still warm to the touch.
I have had Sikva prepare you a bath as well, intended.
Roger spun around, throwing knives coming into his hands, but it was only Amanva, with Sikva kneeling behind her beside a great steaming tub.
What are you doing in my room?
Amanva knelt smoothly, ritually, touching her forehead to the floor.
Forgive me, intended. I have been indisposed of late, and depended overmuch on Sikva and my recovery. My heart aches that we have not been able to attend you.
It's all right. I don't need anything.
Your pardon, intended. But you do need a bath. Tomorrow begins the waning, and you must be prepared.
The waning?
Dark moon, when Alagai Ka, the demon prince, is said to roam. A man must have bright waning days to hold him steady in darkest night.
That's beautiful. Someone should write a song about that.
Your pardon, intended. But there are many. Shall we sing one while we bathe you?
My master told me to beware things too good to be true.
I don't understand.
Perhaps I should bathe myself.
You have already seen us unclad, intended. Do you fear what we may see?
It's not that.
Do not trust us.
Is there a reason I should? You pretend to be innocent girls who don't speak a word of Thesen. Then you try to kill Leisha? And turn out to have understood every word we've said? How do I know there isn't a black leaf in that tub?
If that is your feeling, then kill us, intended.
What? I'm not killing anybody.
It is your right, and no more than we deserve for our betrayal. It is the same fate we will face if you refuse us.
They'll kill you? The Deliverer's own blood?
Either the Damaja will kill us for failing to poison Mistress Leisha, or the Shardamaka will kill us for attempting it. If we are not safe in your chambers, we are not safe.
You are safe here, but that doesn't mean you need to bathe me.
My cousin and I never meant you dishonor, son of Jessam. If you do not want us as wives, we will go to our father and confess.
I don't know if I can accept that.
You need not accept anything this night, save a song of waning and a bath.
As one, the Crasian girls lowered their veils. They rose to their feet and came to him, gently guiding him to the tub and pulling at his clothes. Soon he was naked and sitting in the steaming water, feeling the delicious heat leech the pain from his muscles. Sikva shrugged and her black silk robes fell to the floor. Roja gaped as she turned to unfasten Amanva's robes as well. Sikva stepped into the tub in front of him. Amanva got in behind. Amanva began spilling bowlfuls of hot water over his head as Sikva took a brush and a cake of soap. She was firm and efficient, scrubbing the dirt and blood from him while massaging his sore muscles, but Roger barely noticed, eyes closed, drunk on their voices and the feeling of their skin until Sikva's hands dipped below the water.
Sikva is already known to man and trained at pillow dancing. Let her be our waning gift to you.
Roger didn't know exactly what pillow dancing meant, but he could well imagine. Sikva's lips met his, and she moved onto his lap. Lisha hadn't realized Roger's bedroom was directly beneath hers until she heard Sikva. At first, she thought the girl was in pain and sat up, ready to fetch her apron. But then she realized the nature of the sounds. She wasn't surprised, really. In some ways, it was more surprising it had taken so long. Sikva's state, after Enevra had been so encouraging of a virginity test, had never set well with Lisha. It was too easy a play on Roger's chivalry, too convenient a way to tempt him into accepting them as brides. Roger was only a man, after all. She knew it was only half the story. Enevra had played her as well. In truth, though she did not approve of a man taking more than one wife, she thought Roger would have a good influence on the girls, and perhaps the responsibilities of a husband might help mature him as well, if this was what he wanted.
Even if it is, I don't have to listen to it.
Lisha gave up on her bed and walked down the hall, choosing one of the many empty bedrooms on her floor. She fell gratefully into the covers and expected to drift off immediately, but the sounds had affected her, bringing unbidden images to mind. Jardir, his shirt stripped off, his muscled skin alive with wards. She wondered if they would tingle to the touch as Arlen's had. When she finally drifted off, it was to thoughts of passion. In her dreams, she remembered the heat of the fireplace as she and Garrod had squirmed together on the floor of her parents' common room. Merrick's wolfish eyes, the ardent feeling of Arlen's kisses and embrace. But Garrod and Merrick had betrayed her, and Arlen had shunned her. The dream became a nightmare as flashes, more detailed than ever before, came back to her about that afternoon on the road when she was pinned by three men. She felt the way they had pulled her hair, relived what they had done atop her, things she had blocked from her mind, but knew were horrid truth. Through it all, she could see the sneer Enevra had given her at the whipping. She woke up with her heart pounding in her chest. Her hand shook for something to defend herself with, but of course, she was alone. When she reoriented herself, the fear fled, replaced by harsh anger.
They took something from me on that road, but I'll be corresponded if I let them take everything.
Lisha felt the paint and powder thick on her face as she tried on what felt like the 100th dress, all the while being careful of her pinned hair, lest it lose its shape. Jardir was coming to court. He had sent word that morning that he wished to visit in the afternoon to continue to read to her from the Evesia, as he had done on the road, but no one had any illusions regarding his intent. Aban's first wife, Shamava, brought dozens of dresses for her to try, Crasian silk smoother than a baby's skin, brightly colored and scandalously cut. She and Alona dressed Lisha like a doll, parading her before the mirrors lining the walls and arguing over which cuts were most flattering. Wanda looked on in amusement, probably feeling vindicated for the similar treatment she had suffered at the hands of Duchess Arane's seamstress.
Oh, this one's too much, even by my standard.
Too little, you mean?
The dress was practically transparent, like something a Nevero would wear. She'd need one of Bruna's thick-knitted shawls to feel half-decent in it.
You don't want to give it all away. Let him work a bit to earn more than a peek.
Alona chose a more opaque dress, but the silk still clung to Leisha in a way that made her feel as if she were naked.
Nonsense! Mistress Leisha has a body to rival even the Damaja. Let Shardamaka see well what he cannot have until the contract is signed.
Enough!
Leisha pulled the dress Alona had chosen over her head and threw it to the floor. She took a cloth and began to wipe away the paints and powders Shamava had applied to her face while Alona looked over her shoulder.
Wanda, go and fetch my blue dress.
That plain old thing? Will you look like...
Like myself. Not some painted Angerian whore.
Oh, at least leave your hair. I worked all morning on it, and it won't kill you to look nice.
Leisha turned, admiring the job her mother had done with her rich black hair, sending it in curling cascades down her back with a rebellious cut across her forehead. She smiled. Wanda returned with Leisha's blue dress, but Leisha looked at it.
On second thought, fetch my festival dress. No reason I can't look nice.
Leisha waited in her chambers for Jardir to arrive. She had sent the other women away. Their talk only made her nerves tighten further. But it was not Jardir waiting on the other side, only Aban, his eyes down as he held a tiny bottle and a tinier glass.
A gift for courage.
What is it?
Oh, smells like something I brewed to disinfect a wound.
No doubt it has been used for that purpose many times. It is called Kuzi, a drink my people often use to calm their nerves. Even the Dal Shoram use it to give them heart when the sun sets.
They get drunk before going off to fight?
There is a clarity in the haze of Kuzi, mistress. One cup and you will be warmed and calm. Two and you will have a Sharum's courage. Three and you'll feel you can dance on the edge of Nir's abyss without falling in.
Perhaps one. I wouldn't mind a little warmth right now.
Every cup is easier than the last, mistress.
Leisha poured herself a second cup. Indeed, it went down more smoothly. The third tasted just like cinnamon. Aban was right about the koozie. Leisha could feel it wrapped around her like a warded cloak, warming and protecting her at the same time. The room felt hot, even in her low-necked festival dress. She fanned her breasts and noted with amusement the furtive glances Jardir cast while trying to feign disinterest. The avizia lay open between them as they lounged on silken pillows, but Jardir had not read a passage to her in some time. They spoke of other things. Her improving language skills, his life in the Kaji Sharaj, and her apprenticeship to Bruna, how his mother had been outcast for having too many daughters.
My mother wasn't pleased to only have a daughter either.
A daughter like you is worth a dozen sons. But what of your brothers? That they are with Evrim now does not diminish her gift to them.
My mother lied about that, Amon. I am her only child. And I have no magic dice by which to promise you sons.
It will be as Evrim wills. Even if you have three girls first, I will cherish them and hold faith that sons will follow.
I'm not a virgin, either.
Jardir looked at her for a long time, and Leisha wondered if she had said too much. What business was it of his anyway, if she was or wasn't? But in his eyes it was, and her mother's lie weighed on her as if it were her own, for she confirmed it by her silence.
I am not either. Marry me.
What need do you have of another wife when you already have...
14. Kaji had 1,000.
Does anyone even remember the name of his 15th?
Shana Vakrivak. It is said her father stole shadows to make her hair, and from her womb came the first watchers, invisible in the night, yet ever vigilant at their father's side.
You're making that up.
Will you kiss me if I am not?
Only if I may slap you if you are.
Jardir pointed to the avizia.
Every wife Kaji took is listed here, the names on it forever. Some of the entries are quite extensive.
All 1,000 are listed?
The entries don't begin to shorten until well after 100.
Leisha smirked and picked up the book.
Page 237, 8th line. What does it say?
Shana Vakrivak.
Leisha read the entire passage to him, trying hard to mimic the musical accent of the Crasian tongue.
It gives my heart great joy to hear you speak my language. I am penning my life as well. The Amanja, written in my own blood as Kaji wrote the Avija. If you fear to be forgotten, say you will be mine, and I will pen an entire dune to you.
I still don't know that I wish to be.
Jardir's smile began to fade, but she leaned in, giving him a smile of her own.
But you have earned your kiss.
What if your mother catches us?
Leisha took his face in her hands, pulling him back to her.
I barred the door.
Leisha was an herb gatherer, a student of old world science and a conductor of her own experiments. She loved nothing more than to learn a new thing, and whether it was herbs or warding or foreign tongues, there was no skill she could not master and bring new innovation to. So it was for her in the pillows that day, as they shed their clothes, and Leisha, who had spent the last decade and a half learning to heal bodies, finally learned to make them sing.
You put even Jawar Sharam pillow dancers to shame.
Years of repressed passion.
Leisha stretched her back deliciously, unashamed at her nudity. She had never felt so free.
You're lucky to be the Shardam Akha. A lesser man might not have survived.
I am bred for war and will fight this joyous battle with you 100,000 times if need be.
He stood and bowed low.
But I fear the sun is setting, and we must step into battle of another sort. Tonight is the first night of waning, and the Alagai will be strong.
Leisha nodded, and they reluctantly pulled on their clothes, and she her pocketed apron. No one said anything to them as Garand, Wanda, and Roger met them in the courtyard with awaiting spears of the Deliverer. Leisha felt so different, she was sure it must be obvious to the others. But if it was, they gave no sign. Even during Alagai Sharak, Leisha found it hard to keep focus so near to Jardir. He seemed to feel it too, never straying from her side as she inspected and dealt with the few minor wounds the skilled warriors incurred.
May I read to you again tomorrow?
Jardir would be needed for hours more, but the Hollowers were allowed to return to the Palace of Mirrors.
You may read to me every day, if you wish.
The Corling Prince kept a respectful distance as it watched the air and his men kill drones. The Mind Demon had been watching the air every cycle for several turns now, and as the princes had feared, he was a unifier. It was clear he did not know the extent of the powers of the demon bone, spear, and crown, but nevertheless, his power was growing, and the human drones were beginning to organize into more than an inconvenience. Already, it would be difficult to kill the heir, and even if the Corling Prince succeeded, there were many who could potentially take his place. But the northern female was a new variable, a weakness in the heir's armor. Her mind was unprotected, and she knew much about the heir and the one its brother tracked in the north. When she broke off from the others, the Mind Demon followed. Back in the palace, Leisha practically flew up the steps to her chambers.
What's got into you?
Nothing that hasn't gotten into you, it seems.
Wanda looked at her blankly.
Find your bed. Drillmaster Kaval will be in here shouting at you before you know it.
Kaval ain't so bad.
Wanda did as she was bade. Leisha walked on tiptoe past the door to her mother's chambers, praying the woman would at least have the decency to wait until morning before interrogating her. She thanked the Creator when she managed to slip past and lock herself in the suite where she and Jardir had made love. Alone at last, the wide smile she had been resisting all night broke out on Leisha's face, and a hood was thrown over her head. A cord at the base of the hood pulled tight, cutting off her breath. A strong hand yanked her arms behind her, and that same cord was used to bind her wrists. Her assailant kicked her feet out from behind and tied her ankles with the end of the cord. Leisha thrashed about at first, but every movement tightened the cord around her throat, and she quickly calmed lest she strangle herself. She was hefted over a strong shoulder and carried to the window, shivering in the cool night air as she was taken out and veritably run down a ladder. Leisha could tell by the way the ladder bounced that she had at least two captors. If her weight hindered the man who held her, he gave no sign, running swiftly through the night streets with even breath and steady heart. Leisha tried to stay oriented, but it proved impossible. She was taken up a set of steps and into a building, down a series of hallways, and then through a door. The men stopped, and she was unceremoniously dropped to the floor. A thick carpet kept her from real harm. The cord at her ankles and wrists was cut, and the hood was yanked from her head. The room was not brightly lit, but after being hooded, the oil lamp stung. Leisha raised a shaking hand to shield her eyes before they adjusted. When they did, she found herself strewn on her belly on the floor before Anevera, lying on a bed of pillows and regarding her as a cat might a cornered mouse. The Damaja looked to the two warriors behind her. They were clad head to toe in black, as all Dal Sharam, and their night veils were up, but they carried neither spear nor shield, each with a ladder held in perfect balance on one of his shoulders.
You were never here.
The men bowed and vanished. She looked down at Leisha and smiled.
Men have their uses. Please, come join me.
Anevera gestured to another pile of pillows across from her. Leisha wobbled slightly as the blood returned to her numb feet, but she stood as quickly as she was able, resisting the urge to rub her throat as she looked around the large room. It was a pillowed love chamber, dimly lit and scented, every surface coated with velvet or silk. The door was right behind her.
No one guards the other side.
Anevera waved her hand as if to give Leisha permission to check. She did, reaching for the brass pull ring, but she was thrown backward. She saw wards flare around the lintel, jamb, and sill of the door, but they faded in an instant, gone except for ghostly afterimages that danced before her still adjusting eyes. More curious than fearful, Leisha got back to her feet, studying the wards masterfully painted in silver and gold around the frame. Many were new to her, but she noticed wards of silence worked in with the rest. No one outside would hear what went on within. She flicked a finger against the net, watching the wards around the contact point flare for a moment, illuminating the tightly woven net.
What's power in it?
There were no corlings about to provide the necessary magic, and without magic, wards were just writing. Given time, Leisha knew she could disable the wards and escape, but that was time she would have to take her attention away from Anevera, and there was no telling what the woman might do. She turned back to the Damaja, still lounging on her pillows.
All right.
Leisha walked over and took a seat opposite Anevera.
What is it you'd like to discuss?
Do you mean to play the fool? Did you think I would not know the moment you touched him?
So what if you do? There was no crime. By your own laws, a man may bed whom he pleases, so long as she's not the wife of another man.
Perhaps behaving like a harlot is the way a woman gains a husband in the North. But among my people, such women are kept in line by the wives of their victims.
Amon asked for my hand long before I bedded him, and I doubt he considers himself a victim. His willingness was quite apparent in his vigor.
Ugh! Renounce my husband's proposal and flee Everam's bounty tonight! I give you this one chance to live.
Your last two attempts on my life failed, Damaja. What makes you think another would have success?
Because I wouldn't leave it up to a 15-year-old girl this time. And because my husband won't find us here in time to save you. I should tell everyone that you came to murder me the night you seduced my husband. No one will question my right to end you.
I question whether you can manage it.
Anevera produced a small object from beneath her pillows. The flame struck Leisha with an intense flash of heat before it vanished.
I can incinerate you where you sit.
It was an impressive trick, but Leisha, who had been brewing flame work for over a decade, found the effect less profound than the means by which it was created. Anevera had struck no spark, mixed no chemics, made no impact. She looked more closely at the object in Anevera's hand, and it all became clear. It was a flame demon's skull.
That's how she's powering the wards!
Leisha wondered why she hadn't thought of it herself months ago.
Alagahora! Demon bones!
Is that how you power the doorframe? Are there Alagahora hidden in the wood?
Anevera glanced toward the door, and in that instant, Leisha's hand darted to a pocket of her apron, coming out with a handful of toss bags she threw Anevera's way. Anevera threw her arms in front of her face. Leisha wasted no time, crossing the space between them in an instant and grabbing the wrist that held the demon's skull. She pressed her thumb hard into a nerve cluster, and the skull fell to the floor. Leisha's other hand was not idle, curling into a fist. Leisha drew back for a second blow, but Anevera rolled onto the floor and twisted, grabbing Leisha's shoulders and driving a knee between her legs.
Oh, did my husband thrust well? Did my husband thrust hard?
Leisha had never felt such pain. She grabbed blindly for the Damaja's hair, but Enevra caught her sleeve cuffs in tight fists, guiding Leisha's arms away as a jongleur might guide a puppet. In her heavy skirts, Leisha was helpless to resist as Enevra slithered behind her and dropped the sleeves in favor of a chokehold.
Thank you. I would have killed you with clean fire and spared the paint on my nails, but this is much more satisfying.
Leisha could reach no vulnerable point with hand or powder, and the world began to blur as the air in her lungs depleted. Leisha was beginning to black out when she pulled the warded knife from her belt and drove it into Enevra's thigh. Leisha was able to kick away. She rolled to her knees with the knife held out before her. Enevra rolled the other way, reaching into a pouch at her waist and throwing something Leisha's way. Leisha dove to the side. One of the projectiles passed clear through her thigh and another lodged in her shoulder. She pulled it free and found it held a demon tooth. It was covered in her red blood, but she could feel with her thumb the wards etching into its surface. She shoved it into a pocket for later study. Enevra was back on her feet by then, charging at Leisha. Leisha put her knife up as she got back to her feet. Enevra checked herself and began to circle. She pulled a curved knife of her own from her belt, the warded blade sharp as any of Leisha's scalpels. Leisha put a hand into another of her apron's pouches, and Enevra made a similar reach into the black velvet bag at her wrist. The Corling Prince watched in amusement as the females postured like high princes when the queen was preparing to mate. It had intended to consume the northern female's mind and replace her with its mimic to get close and kill the air, but their own politics were so much more delicious. They could break both the air's spirit and his dream of unity at once. All they needed was a nudge. It was the darkest part of the night when Jardir finally returned to his palace. He was not tired. He had not truly felt tired of body since he had first used the Spear of Khaji, but he longed for his bed nevertheless, if only for a chance to close his eyes and dream of her to while away some of the hours before he could visit again. Leisha Paper truly was a gift from Everim. Her acceptance of his proposal seemed assured, and with it his foothold in the Northland, but he found that mattered less to him now than the thought of having her at his side. Brilliant, beautiful, and young enough to bear him many sons, she also contained a boundless passion that came out in her anger and in her loving. A worthy bride for even the Deliverer, and a valuable check against the Damaja's rising power. Enevra would try to stop the marriage, of course, but that was a worry for another day. Jardir saw the light on in his chambers and frowned. Everim's bounty had no undercity for women and children, even on waning. His wives instead took turns waiting in his private chambers with a bath and a willing body, but Jardir wanted neither water nor woman. His lust could only be sated by one, and beneath his robes, her scent was still on his skin. He wanted to keep it there a while longer.
I require nothing. Leave me!
But the women in his room were not lesser wives, and they made no effort to leave.
We need to talk.
Leisha was there, and Enevra was at her side.
For once, I agree with the northern whore.
Jardir looked more closely at the women. Their clothes were ragged and torn. Enevra had a blood-soaked scarf tied around her leg, and Leisha's shoulder was similarly bound. Enevra's nose was twisted and swollen 3 times its normal size, and Leisha's throat was purple and bruised. She favored one leg.
What has happened?
Your first wife and I have been talking, and we have decided we will not share you.
Jardir made to go to them, but Leisha held up a finger that checked him like a child.
You keep your distance! No touching either of us again until you make a choice.
Choice?
Her or me. You can't have us both. The one you choose can be your Jiwaka, and the other shall have a quick death at your hand in the town circle.
Leisha gave Enevra a look of disgust, but did not argue.
You agree to this, even with your gatherer's vow?
Strip her naked and cast her into the street for all to see, if you prefer. Weak, like all northerners, leaving enemies to strike another day. What you call weakness, I call strength.
Jardir looked from one woman to the other, unable to believe matters had come to this, but their eyes were hard and he knew they meant every word. The choice was impossible. Kill Leisha? Unthinkable. Even if it wouldn't destroy any potential allies in the north, Jardir would sooner cut out his own heart than harm her. But the alternative was equally impossible. The Damating would not follow Leisha, and if he stripped Enevra of power and in favor of a northern woman, they might choose to follow Enevra still, causing a schism through his empire that might never heal. and she was his first wife, the mother of his children, who had orchestrated his rise to power and given him the tools to win Sharaka. Despite the pain she regularly caused him, he looked at her and found he loved her still.
I cannot make such a choice.
You must, now, or I will cut the whore's throat myself.
Not if I cut yours first.
No!
Shardir threw the spear of Khaji. It struck the wall and embedded deeply, quivering between the two women. He pounced on them cat-quick, grabbing their wrists and pulling them away from each other. As he did, the wards on his crown flared to life, illuminating the women, and both shook their heads as if waking from a dream.
Behind you!
Alagai Ka!
Alagai Ka, the name Jardir and his men had laughingly given to the rock demon that followed the Parchin, but it was an ancient name, one that carried an aura of immense power. Alagai Ka was consort to the Mother of Demons, and he and his sons were said to be the most powerful of the demon lords, generals of Ni's forces. Jardir spun to meet the demon, but there was nothing to see at first. Then, as he concentrated, the crown of Khaji warmed once more, and he could see that part of the room was clouded by magic. There was a ripple in the cloud, and suddenly a demon more fearsome than any he had ever seen leapt at him. He reached for the spear, but it held fast in the wall for the split second it took the demon to cross the floor and tackle Jardir. Jardir was knocked over the bed, and the two of them landed hard on the far side, the demon clawing madly at him. He felt the ceramic armor plates in his robe shattering under its claws, but they blunted the initial attack. The demon seemed to sense this, and its mouth widened impossibly, growing rows of new teeth right before his eyes as it became a maw large enough to swallow his entire head. Jardir rolled and pushed out with his arms, gaining enough space to work his leg up between them. He kicked out, knocking the demon away long enough for him to tear off his robes and reveal the scars Enevra had cut into his skin. They flared brightly as he met the demon's next attack head-on. Nisha hadn't known the demon was in her mind until Jardir touched her and the wards on his crown flared. She heard the demon's whispers then and knew them for what they were. The demon was in the room with them. Nisha resisted, as did Enevra, thrashing wildly against its control, but the outcome was never in doubt. The demon would have them in a moment. Already she felt an enormous weight in her limbs as the mind demon commanded her to lie down, helpless and weak, while it watched its bodyguard kill Jardir. Nisha looked around frantically, spotting an incense tray on the nightstand that had not yet been cleaned. She flung herself toward it as she went down, pretending it was an accident as she stuck her hand in the greasy ashes and knocked the tray to the floor in a cloud. Enevra hit the floor as well, limbs flopping weakly, and Nisha rolled toward her, using the last of her energy to draw a ward on Enevra's forehead, the same ward at the center of Jardir's crown. Immediately, the symbol flared, and even as Leisha fell, her limbs useless, and Enevra sat up. The demon seemed not to notice, its attention on Jardir fighting for his life. Enevra scowled and grabbed Leisha's hair.
You are still a whore.
Enevra dipped her finger in the ashes, drawing a mind ward on Leisha's forehead as well. Leisha sat up, reaching for her warded knife. Enevra took what looked like a warded lump of coal from the black felt pouch at her waist and held it toward the mind demon. Lightning arced from the stone to strike the demon. It shrieked as it was thrown across the room, hitting the wall before dropping lifeless to the ground. The demon changed shape continually, but Jardir pressed his attack. He matched the demon's raw aggression with the fury of a warrior bred for the maze. His crown flared brightly, and he felt so suffused with power that the wounds the demon inflicted began healing before the full damage was done.
I am fighting Alagai Ka, and I am winning!
Then, the demon picked up a heavy table in one giant claw and smashed it down on him as a hammer strikes a nail. Bones splintered on the impact, jutting from his leg and stabbing into his innards. He felt the magic speeding his body's natural healing along at an incredible rate, but it could not set the broken bones, and he felt them healing at odd angles. But before the demon could bring the table down again, it grabbed its head, dropping the table. Jardir kicked out with his good leg to deflect it as the demon's flesh seemed to melt like wax and it stumbled about. Jardir looked up then and saw why. He hadn't been fighting Alagai Ka at all. Leisha and Enevera stood over the smoking body of a slender demon with a gigantic head. Even from across the room, Jardir could sense the power and evil the creature radiated. The demon he had fought was its hasik, brainless muscle to clear paths and break skulls that were beneath its master to shatter personally. The slender demon lifted its head. The demon drew a ward in the air, dispersing the energy. It reached out, and the demon bone flew from her head. The slender demon caught it, and the bone glowed briefly in the demon's grasp before the magic was absorbed and the bone crumbled to dust. The demon reached out again, and Enevera's horror pouch flew to its hands. It upended the bag, dropping her precious dice into its clawed hand. Leisha and Enevera charged the demon with their warded knives, but it drew another ward in the air that flared to throw them across the room as if picked up by a great wind. The Alagai horror glowed as the demon absorbed their power. Jardir felt a strange mix of fear and relief as the dice that had controlled his life for more than 20 years crumbled to dust. The mimic demon regained its senses as soon as its master recovered, but Jardir was already moving, springing across the broken bed on his good leg. He caught the spear of Kaji in his hands as he rolled off the far side, letting his weight pull it from the wall. Beam screamed through Jardir's mangled leg as he came to his feet, but he embraced it effortlessly, his movement sharp and decisive as he drew back and threw. The spear blasted through the mind demon's skull, and continuing on to stick quivering in the far wall. The mind demon fell dead, and without it, the mimic fell to the ground, thrashing about as if on fire. Finally, it lay still, a melted pile of scale and claw. Enevera went to Jardir and pulled hard at his foot to give herself play to reinsert the bone jutting from his leg. Shaking off her own pains, Leisha fumbled to her side, taking the bone in her hand and guiding it back into the proper alignment. As with Harlan, the wound began to close almost instantly, but Leisha still reached for needle and thread to stitch it evenly.
There is no need.
Enevera rose to her feet and went to the mind demon's body. She drew her warded knife and cut off one of its vestigial horns. She returned with a foul, ichorous thing, then removed a thin brush and bottle from her pouch. She drew neat wards along the edges of Jardir's wound, and as she passed the horn over them, the wards flared, closing the incision seamlessly. She did the same for her own wound, and then wordlessly tended to Leisha, not meeting her eyes. Leisha watched in silence, memorizing the wards Enevera used and the fashion in which she knit them together. She looked at the horn when she was finished. It was still intact.
I'll make better dice from this one's bones anyway.
Leisha went to the mind demon's body herself, cutting off the other horn and one of its arms. These she rolled in a heavy tapestry for later study. Enevera's eyes narrowed at her, but she said nothing.
Why has no one come to investigate the sounds of battle?
I expect it was simple for Alagai Ka to draw wards of silence around your chambers. They will likely remain in power until the sunlight strikes the walls.
It controlled everything you said and did?
It even made us fight each other for its amusement.
Yes, it made us do that.
Why play such cruel games? Why not just have one of you cut my throat as we lay in the pillows?
Because it didn't want to kill you. It's more afraid of your power to inspire than to fight. And none inspires more than a martyr.
Better to discredit you and splinter the unity of your forces.
But you are the Sharda Maka. There can be no further question with Alagai Ka dead at your hand.
That was not Alagai Ka. It was too easy. More likely, this was the least of his princelings. There will be more and greater.
I think so too. Which is why I'm holding you to your promise, Amon. I have seen Evrim's bounty, and now I wish to return home. I must prepare my people.
You do not need to go. I will have you as one of my husband's Jiwa Sen.
A lesser wife? No, I don't think so.
I will still make you my northern Jiwa Ka if you wish it.
I would still be one of many, Amon. The man I wed will be mine, alone.
His face fell, but Leisha fell firm. and Jardir nodded finally.
The Hollow Tribe will be honored regardless. I cannot prevent the tribes from trying to steal a few of your wells, but know that they will be subject to my wrath should they war upon you.
Thank you.
Jardir reached out, touching her shoulder and squeezing gently.
And I apologize if what happened in the Palace of Mirrors was not your own will.
Leisha threw herself at him, hugging him tightly and kissing him on the cheek.
We did that in the light of day, Amon.